السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، نحمده ونسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، إلها واحدا أحدا فردا صمدا حيا قيوما، نؤمن له بالربوبية ونقر له بالعبودية. من يهدي الله فهو المهتدي، ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. ونشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله، أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون. اللهم صل وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد، كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. وصل اللهم وسلم على جميع الأنبياء والمرسلين والشهداء والصالحين وعترة نبيك الطاهرين. عباد الله، أوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله عز وجل. قال الله في كتابه الحكيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: يا أيها الناس أنتم الفقراء إلى الله والله هو الغني الحميد. صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. For most of human history, the most common form of socio-economic organization was the agrarian model, the agricultural model, in which families and communities worked together to produce their basic needs, such as food, tools they needed in order to create more food, tools they needed to create to move their lives forward. And it's interesting because in Islamic history, one Islamic historiographer, historian, Ibn Khaldun, he says in his book, Al-Muqaddimah, which is one of the more famous books on early Islamic history, he says that, you know, before the Arabs, specifically speaking about the Arabs, he says they were Bedouins. And Bedouins, they learned to survive on their own. And whatever skills they learned to survive with, they imparted to their generations, to their offspring. And so if you study the Bedouin lifestyle, they were socially closer knit to one another. There were stronger ties of kinship with one another. And they had acquired certain characteristics which allowed them to thrive in dangerous environments. And he says that it was not until those Bedouins became sedentary that they started to settle down, they became more relaxed, that those characteristics of bravery slowly began to fade away. Why? Because there was no more danger, there was no more threat, people became relaxed, they began to take up luxury upon themselves. And so those characteristics began to sort of fade away. And it's interesting because if you look at the history of America and you look at the history of the Western world, for the most part, you know, before the Industrial Revolution, most families were on the farm. Children spent time with their parents directly. Daughters with their mothers and sons with their fathers. And so the main source of influence on a child was the parents, the father. And it wasn't the school teacher, and it certainly wasn't social media, because that really didn't exist back in those days. So the model of influence began to change. The discipline began to change. The ideas behind effectiveness and work ethic began to shift and evolve. And some fascinating things began to take place. You know, if you study the shift from the agrarian agricultural age to the industrial age, and then from the industrial age to the information age, anytime a shift like that happens, we begin to ask ourselves as a society certain questions about our work and our place in society. So I'll give you an example. And this is fast forwarding a little bit, but to bring the point home, now we live not so much in the industrial age, but more in the information age. Information is at the end of our fingertips. And people are now able to create certain things for themselves out of scratch. And so because of that, we have, you know, we used to have the midlife crisis before, and I've mentioned this before, but now you have the quarter life crisis for a number of reasons. There are so many options out there. People that are in Gen Y and Gen Z are kind of confused on what to do. So what's the path that I'm supposed to take? How do I become fulfilled? How do I create impact in this world? Does the work that I do really matter? Is it really significant? And these are all very, very important questions in finding meaning and fulfillment in our lives, because sometimes we work for hours, for weeks, for days without a goal, and so we're left without meaning. We're left without purpose, even if we're, you know, making a lot of money and that sort of thing. So there's a few things that happened during that time when we shifted from the agrarian age to the industrial age. Number one is that there was a shift in our education system. In the United States, we needed an education system that was going to create employees that can work in factories and soldiers. And so what we did here in the Western world is that we adopted the Prussian education system. Now, the Kingdom of Prussia no longer exists. It's mostly present-day Germany. But at that time, they came up, the Prussian system, they came up with a model that would produce soldiers and produce employees, because they were shifting into the industrial age. And that's the time when education became mandatory. So because we adopted it here, and this was in the late 1800s, what happened was that now children, instead of their primary source of influence being their parents, because they were out in the field working with their parents, or if they became a butcher or a baker or a blacksmith or a tailor, learning those skills through direct apprenticeship from their parents who learned it from their grandparents who learned it from their great-grandparents, now the primary source of influence became who? Became the teacher. So that was one shift that happened when it came to education. Another shift that happened was people began to think, okay, if we're shifting our work model, if we're not working in the farms anymore and now we're working in factories, how do we increase efficiency? Because now you have the system, and human beings, employees, they're part of the system. So you have to create a way to sustain and increase efficiency. So there was a gentleman by the name of Frederick Winslow Taylor, and he came up with the theories of scientific management. And Frederick Winslow Taylor was interesting because by profession, he was a mechanical engineer. So he's always thinking of ways to, you know, increase efficiency, right? I mean, no offense to my friends who are scientists or, you know, mechanical engineers or engineers in general, but the conversation can get pretty dry and boring very quickly, because the mind thinks a certain way. When you're trained a certain way, the mind begins to look at everything in that way. Even when it comes to your family, you start thinking, okay, how do I increase efficiency, and how do I do this, and how do I do that? And so that theory kind of pours into other areas of our life. Now, his intentions were great, because when he wrote the theories of scientific management, in fact, that did increase productivity in the workplace. It did increase efficiency in the workplace. But one unintended consequence that happened is that people were reduced to objects. And those same scientific theories, if you move forward and you see how they developed and how they came into practice, those same theories were used in order to justify the mass murder of millions during the Holocaust, because people were just looked at as a commodity, as an asset. And if you want to kind of build efficiency in this country or in this society, there are certain parts of that community, there are certain parts of that society that you can cut out and you can get rid of in order to increase efficiency. So the theories in general, they were very, they were efficient in what they did in the workplace, but when it came to adding value in people's lives and making them feel like they were connected to a community and making them feel that they were part of a greater cause, it had unintended consequences. So the reason I bring up all of that is because that was a shift in mindset that happened because of what was going on at the time. You had the agrarian age where people were kind of just doing their own thing and they were being efficient on their own. But then as they transitioned into the industrial age and they became, you know, farmers became factory workers and now they're working in a system with other people, hundreds of people at a time, they needed a way to develop this efficiency model. But now you have the switch from the industrial age to the information age, where people can now find meaning in the work that they do. Not that people before didn't find meaning, but now there's a different context. So anytime a shift like that happens, people begin to think, am I just another cog in the wheel? What can I do that will increase my impact? What can I do that will give my life purpose and my life's work meaning? And that's a very, very important question. Because it's proven that if you can give people a sense of fulfillment, if you can give them a sense of happiness, they'll stick in the organization. And when I say organization, I don't just mean company. You know, a mosque is an organization. A family is an organization. A sports team is an organization. So now, because we have that shift, it's shifted from me being a part of a collective group to radical individualism. If you think about it, now you're at the age, we're in the age where you practically don't need anybody for anything. Because you have, if you want information, you have Google. If you want entertainment, you have YouTube and Netflix, all of it's streaming. If you want, you know, collective information, you have Wikipedia. You want to connect with people, friends, you have Facebook. Professionally, you want to create a network, you have LinkedIn. You have all these modes and they're all at your fingertips. But technology today, if you think about it, it's connecting us to everyone and it's connecting us to no one at the same time. Because there's a sense that I have this large network that I'm connected to, but I'm still feeling lonely on the inside. It hasn't cured and it hasn't treated issues such as loneliness. In fact, if anything, you look at loneliness and anxiety and depression in people, it's only gone higher and higher over the past few decades. Because we're connected to everyone, but at the same time, we're connected to no one. And don't get me wrong, technology and social media is a great tool, but sometimes it can hinder the meaningful relationships that we're supposed to have with people that make us feel fulfilled and growing and interconnected. So you have this shift where people now feel totally independent. And independence should not be our goal. Rather, our goal should be interdependence. What's the difference between independence and interdependence? Independence is, I can live off my own, I don't need anyone, I can help myself, I can make it to the top on my own. Interdependence is understanding that in order to be effective human being in society, in order to be effective citizen of God's kingdom, that I need to learn to live with others in a harmonious way. Independence says, I don't need anyone. Interdependence means not that I cling on to someone and I'm dependent on someone, but I can live with other people harmoniously. That should be the goal. And the reason I bring this up is because the Quran reminds us of this. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ أَنْتُمُ الْفُقَرَاءُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ هُوَ الْغَنِيُّ الْحَمِيدُ. O people, think about it in this way. The Quran generally says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, O you who believe. When God says, O you who believe, He's speaking to the believing community, Muslims. But here He says, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ, O people, whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim, understand this. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ أَنْتُمُ الْفُقَرَاءُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ هُوَ الْغَنِيُّ الْحَمِيدُ. That whatever you do, you will be in a perpetual state of faqr, which is need, poverty. Not financial poverty, but rather spiritual and intrinsic poverty to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And there's a narration that explains some of the context behind this verse. It says that there are two areas in which we are faqir to Allah, in which we are in poverty to God. Number one is when it comes to our existence, when it comes to our creation. We can't separate ourselves from the power of God and from the might of God. And number two is in our sustenance. And there's a narration that reminds us that when God created us, that He ordained that we be faqir to Him. Meaning, you buy a computer or you buy a car, and there are certain programs which are installed in there that you can't uninstall no matter what. There are certain specifications about the car that you can't remove no matter what, or it'll stop functioning. Certain programming, and especially today with cars, you know, they're able to increase efficiency with certain programming and whatnot. Things that you just can't remove from the car. Before, the cool thing was tuning your car. You can manually, you know, do things to tune your car. Now they're limiting that, right? And so, to understand that we will be in a perpetual need for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that as long as we are His creation, we are His servants. Now that doesn't mean, and again, this ties back to the idea of independence and interdependence. That you can create something on your own, but understand that you will always be in attachment to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the highest form of interdependence is the moment that we realize that our entire existence and our sustenance relies on our faqr, our poverty to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's the pinnacle. That's the height. And the reason I bring this up, I want to share with you, a few days I was discussing with one of the students, you know, one of the questions that normally comes up, and I experienced this as I began to teach and educate, and, you know, if I ever conducted a question and answer session, you know, besides the question of can I listen to music or can I get a tattoo, which are very, very deep existential questions, I know. But after that, people would normally ask the question, do I have free will? Or are my actions controlled? And that's a classic question, because if you go back in our hadith, you find that even during the times of the Imams alayhi salam, people would ask the Imams those questions, especially as kalam and theology became more prominent discussions. So do we believe in jabr, meaning fatalism, everything is controlled? Or do we believe in tafwir, which is free will? And I would always think to myself, I'm sure this question has been discussed before. I'm sure people have heard this answer before. And if you're part of a believing community, you've probably heard at least one or two or five or 15 lectures on this topic. But then I came to a realization that it's not so much a theological question as it is a psychological question. That people want to know, how much control do I have over my life? Because when you ask a question, normally, you're thinking of your own life. You're thinking of your own present. You're thinking of your own past. You're thinking of your own future. And people want to know the question, how much control do I have over my life versus how much control does God, who to them is an outside force, has over my life? And that's a very important question, because that creates a certain psychology for us. And a lot of what we believe to be true, our theological assumptions, they shape our psychology. For instance, when it comes to making our parents happy, right? I mean, that's a big psychological thing for many people, especially the younger generation. And, you know, the theology behind it, we assume that the theology behind it is clear cut. You know, God says in the Quran that, lower for them the wings of humility. وَخْفِضْ لَهُمَا جَنَاحَ الدُّلِّ مِنَ الرَّحْمَةِ, which is true. And God tells us to obey our parents, which is true, and to respect our parents, which is true. But then the question comes, to what extent? I mean, if my parents want me to become a doctor and nothing else, and I choose to do something else. I become an artist or whatever, something else, whatever is popular these days. Am I disobeying them? And if I disobey them, will I be blessed in what I do? Will I be blessed in my future? See, it's a theological question, but it's more of a psychological question. And so when you look at that whole idea of, are we forced? And I'll just go over this very quickly. Are we completely controlled, or are we in control? A man asks the sixth Imam, Al-Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, that question. He says, do we follow the theory of Jabr, or do we follow the theory of Tafwid? Jabr meaning fatalism, that everything that we do is controlled and it's already been dictated and it's already been decided. Or do we believe in free will, that God has granted us free will, that we're able to move however we want and behave and act however we want? And what is the Imam, what's the reply that the Imam gives him? He says, لا جبر ولا تفويض. It's not fatalism, nor is it free will, ولكن أمر بين أمرين. That it's a matter in between the two. And that's a very psychological thing, because if you think about it, in today's world, we're kind of, you're almost in the information age, free to do whatever you want and free to create whatever you want. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that you are not in need of anyone. See, that's the dangerous thinking, that I'm free to do what I want and I live in a free country. That means I don't need anyone. I don't need guidance. I don't need mentorship. I don't need coaching. I don't need my parents. I don't need an authority figure. But then that's going down the wrong path. We need to understand that in order to create that amun baina amlain, that balance, that look, you are in control of certain things in your life, but that doesn't mean that you are fully independent of anyone. Number one, you are independent on God. You are dependent on God. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ أَنْتُمُ الْفُقَرَاءُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ هُوَ الْغَنِيُّ الْحَمِيدُ. And it's almost redundant to speak about this if you haven't truly experienced it. If you haven't truly experienced that faqr and that spiritual poverty to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's not something that can truly be put into words. The feeling that you have, that God is guiding me throughout my decisions. So our goal should be interdependence, not just independence. Knowing that we are dependent on God, and knowing that it is our responsibility to live with one another in a harmonious fashion. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to facilitate that for us. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this holy month. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد